is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, this February our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $1,250 off the Dr. Dish Rebel Plus. You can also subscribe to their 30-day free daily motivational email series for coaches. Check out their new goal setting feature at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Stan Johnson, head men's basketball coach at Loyola Marymount University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on to wrap up All-Star Weekend, talk about some interesting personnel moves around the NBA since we last spoke. And I guess we got a win shares too.
Yeah, we're going to start with a win share. And we're going to start with the Philadelphia 76ers. Okay. And this goes back all the way to the Syracuse Nationals, just so you know, Mike.
Okay. So one of the top five is a Syracuse National.
Well, I'm just saying this record goes back to 49-50. I'll just tell you that all five of the guys I have heard of, well, I should say
one guy's questionable.
Number one is the one that I don't know. He played for Syracuse. So yeah. So there you go. I just looked it up.
Okay. All right. So let's go with Wilt.
Wilt is seven.
Wow. Okay. Then we have to go with, man, Dr. J has to obviously be
Dr. J is number two.
Number two. Now, the question is, Moses was very important, but I don't think Moses played long enough for the Sixers.
Mike, I'll tell you, he's not even in the top 12, so don't even waste time.
Because Moses did not play long enough. Maurice Cheeks.
He is number five.
Okay. Charles Barkley.
He's number three.
So I have three of the top five. Hal Greer.
He is number four. He played with Syracuse. So this guy was on Hal Greer. The number one guy was on Hal Greer's team, but he was there for a long, long time in Syracuse.
Man, going back to...
He shares a name with a terrible dictator.
Shares the name of a terrible dictator.
From around the same era,
a little before this guy's time. Dolph Schayes.
That's number one. There you go. His actual name is Adolf, but he must have not decided that was not a good marketing technique. So he changed his name to Dolph. He got rid of the A.
I guess when I think about Dolph Schayes, I don't know. I mean, obviously I know the name.
He played 996 career games, and all those career games played for the same franchise.
How many of those do you have it in front of you? How many of those were Syracuse? How many of them were the Sixers?
24 were the Sixers. The rest were Syracuse.
So he played 24 games for the Sixers.
972 for the Syracuse Nationals.
Because I know the name Dolph Schayes, and I know the history of him as a player to some degree, but I don't know that
I wouldn't have associated him specifically with any particular franchise. So I didn't do too bad.
Do you know
on
his
that.
Nickname? Do you know what his nicknames are?
Yeah. No, I have no idea.
The Rainbow Kid.
Okay.
No Hands and Dolly.
All right, there you go. All right, okay, can I do some more of these guys?
Yeah,
can I guess
some
more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Bobby Jones?
Not on the list.
Andrew Toney?
Not on the list. Come on, you're missing my era guy.
Allen Iverson.
That is number six.
Okay, yeah, Iverson probably should have been
a guy I would have never expected to be on the list, and he's still in the league in a very limited capacity. He's won multiple.
Andre Iguodala.
There you go. He's number nine.
Okay. Well,
the rest of the guys, I'm gonna say the three of the guys were on Syracuse. This guy played primarily for Syracuse. This guy played mostly, actually, all for Philly in the 80s. This guy, number 12, his picture was black and white, so his nickname was the Mayor. The Mayor.
Steve Mix,
there you go. He's number 12.
Toledo, University of Toledo. Mac guy.
Okay. All right. This guy, number 11 guy, his nickname was Johnny, Iron Man, or Big Red.
Johnny.
Played primarily for Syracuse, two seasons for Philly, and then one season for the Baltimore Bullets in the 65-66.
I got nothing on that one.
His name is Red Kerr.
Red Kerr. Johnny Red Kerr. You don't know Johnny Red Kerr?
I don't know that guy.
He was an assistant coach with the Bulls during the Jordan era.
Well, was he related to Steve Kerr or no?
He was not related to Steve Kerr.
He kind of looks like Steve Kerr.
Again, he does a little bit now that you say that, but I would not have associated him with the Philadelphia 76ers franchise. Interesting.
Okay, number 10. I got nothing on this one. He's got to even have a nickname. Larry Costello. You know that guy? I know the name.
I believe. I don't know. I believe he might have been a guy from Marquette. Yeah, I feel like I have some connection to him through.
He's from Manoa, New York.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe he. Larry Costello, NBA. Let me see.
He played for Niagara University.
I feel like I played for the Philadelphia Warriors, Syracuse Nationals.
He's inducted to the Hall of Fame as a contributor.
I feel like there's something about
him. He's in
him
the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I feel like there's something about him that I should know.
Okay, but the last guy, I'm like, you should know this guy.
Okay.
I recognize the name. I don't really know. I wouldn't pick him out of a lineup or something. His nickname is the Kangaroo Kid.
Bobby Jones.
No.
Oh, Billy Cunningham. What am I thinking? Billy Cunningham. Billy C. C was the coach of the Sixers during the Doc era. Yeah, what am I thinking?
Yeah. He went to UNC, of course.
Yes.
But I knew that guy. I knew that one. That one, I knew him. Anyways.
Billy Cunningham.
He's still alive.
He is. I know him more, I guess, as from my era as a coach. He was kind of predated me and obviously you as a player, but...
Yeah,
very good player, but I knew him more as the coach of the Doc era, right. late 70s,
well, I'm
early 80s.
I'm pretty impressed.
Sixers.
Mike, do you think you wouldn't have gotten Dolph Shaves if I wouldn't have given the hint, right?
No, I don't think I would have got Dolph Shaves because, again, I don't know. I knew Dolph Shaves, but I don't think I would have associated him with the 76ers. And to be honest with you, I honestly don't know if I would have associated the Syracuse Nationals with the Philadelphia 76ers, to be honest with you.
I didn't even know that they were that team. I only just told you that because I looked it up beforehand. So let's be honest.
I always thought the Philadelphia Warriors were the precursor to...
I'm guessing if I looked up Golden State on Basketball Reference, it probably would be linked to the Philadelphia Warriors.
Yes, it would be. Yeah, for sure.
All right, cool. So the reason I chose the Sixers is because that's who the Cavs played right before the All-Star game. We're gonna circle back to that after we talk about the All-Star game, or if we even want to call it a game. I don't know if we want to call that a game, but we're gonna talk about All-Star weekend. And I thought, Mike, we could break this down briefly by day. Did you watch anything from Friday, or did you watch the rookie games at all, or no?
I didn't watch any of that. Okay. I saw none
Mobley
of it.
Mobley continued to impress. His team made it to the finals. They didn't end up winning because Jose Alvarado played off the chain. But those games actually looked like basketball games, Mike. Like, there were, of course, there was a little bit of like goofing and stuff. But like, I'm telling you what, Evan Mobley played like he was legitimately playing. Like, I don't know how many steals he ended up walking away, and I tried to find the stats, but lo and behold, they didn't really keep the stats of that game, those games. But he had to have like three blocks and like five or six steals. He was playing lockdown defense. Anyone that tried to go by him, he just stole the ball. It was awesome. But that's all I got to say on that. And the only thing, other thing I'd say is in the Celebrity All-Star game, did you see the half-court shot that didn't count?
No, I didn't see it.
So Mike the Miz from Parma, Ohio. He's in the wrestling, Mike. Do you know
the real world? The real world.
He was originally. Oh, Mike, you didn't know you were a real world fan.
I didn't know. Well, at that time, that predates my kids. So any pop culture references prior to 2004, I'm pretty good.
So wait, did you ever watch the challenge or no, Mike?
Who? The challenge? No, that was after my. Okay. That was after my
Mike,
time.
Mike, I'm a huge challenge fan. I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you were a real world guy.
I was a real world guy for the first. I don't
that
know.
That would
how many
be, well, 92
were.
To 2004.
So probably, I don't know how many seasons there were in there, but there were quite a few that
they
I watched.
They weren't pumping them out as much as they would pump them out nowadays. But
New
anyways.
York, San Francisco.
DC? Did you watch DC?
Seattle, Vegas. Who was in DC?
That would have been after your time. That would have been like 2006, 2000.
I don't remember DC. Anyways, yeah, I don't remember DC.
Seattle? Did you watch Seattle?
Seattle I watched with the slap.
Yeah, the slap. Nice.
Yeah,
oh, man.
Got it, man.
Listen, come for some NBA. We'll talk about the real world.
Talk anyways, about the real world from 20 years ago. Yeah, really relevant. I'm sure people are
anyways, the Miz pushing the stop button. The Miz hit a half-court shot that didn't count because it was 0.2 seconds after the buzzer. It would have tied the game and forced it to go to overtime. It was pretty awesome. It was a pretty awesome shot.
And, it might have been the highlight of the weekend.
No. We'll get to my interpretation of the highlight of the weekend was.
Okay.
Anyways, so that's what I got for Friday. Anything else you want to add about Friday, Mike?
No, I got nothing.
Okay, Saturday. So we get word that the skills competition is about to start and Giannis is not participating. I was like, how are we just now finding this out? And then, of course, the Sunday game, he played for a minute and then didn't play the rest of the game because of his wrist. And I don't know if you saw the report that came out from Shams. Did you see the report that came out from Shams about 15 minutes ago?
No.
He's probably going to miss games. He's avoided serious injury, but more than likely will miss some games. Some games in quotation marks.
It's not good for Milwaukee.
Avoided structural damage to his wrists. That when I hear that, Mike, they were concerned about structural damage. That's like a 2 to 3 week injury, right?
Maybe. I mean, it just depends, right? I mean, if you're Milwaukee, it doesn't really matter. The next 20 games, sure, you'd like to get the number one seed and be able to have home court when you play potentially Boston in a conference finals. But ultimately, you just got to have him healthy for the postseason. So you do whatever you have to do in order for him to be able to help be healthy.
Okay. Anyways, so he sat out the skills competition. They put Drew Holiday in, and I loved how the announcers were like, oh, this might be better for them because Drew Holiday might be able to actually make some passes.
Yeah, Giannis is only the best player in the league, so why haven't they been there?
Yeah, they ended up losing. And the Utah Jazz team with a terrible. The shooting competition was terrible, by the way. And then that was just a precursor to the 3-point contest. Anyways, anything on the skills competition? Did you watch it or not?
I saw a little bit of it. I saw the tail end because I was actually out with my son watching a high school game. So we got back and that thing was just wrapping up. So we saw the tail end of it. I think they need to find something different. To me, that thing is not compelling. I guess it's semi-interesting that you have the home team, the Cavs last year.
They got to go back to what they were doing. Why did they go away from the Taco Bell thing? Like where they had like the big man and the little man racing and that was fun. I liked that way better than this, right?
That was better than this.
Or can we go to horse? Can we do horse? Can we get like five guys? I mean, I know guys aren't going to want to play.
They tried horse during COVID though. Remember that? They tried it. I guess they were doing it remotely though. Do you remember that?
Yeah. That was terrible. But I'm saying if they do horse on a court, and they actually get five legitimate players. Now I know.
Okay, there's where you have to stop it, right? Because you're just not getting anybody to participate. I mean, we're getting close to, do guys even want to participate in the game? I mean, we're really approaching that point with this whole thing where at what point do guys just say, I don't want to play in this thing. I'm happy to be named an all-star and show up for the weekend, but it's, I don't know how fun it is. So yeah, look, any of these things, no matter what competition you're talking about, unless you have star players, unless you have the best guys at what they do, nobody cares about it.
And listen, I actually, like, when you look at the names for the three-point contest, for the most part, I'm okay with it. Like,
yeah, it's good names.
Good names. It's not like you got Chetty Osmond in the three-point contest. Okay, no offense, Chetty. I apologize, Chetty, but you're not a keynote, a marquee player. You got Dame, who, by the way, congratulations, Mike. You picked Dame to win the three-point contest.
I did.
And you know who I picked? I picked Buddy Hield. And, of course, right, he lost there, by a point.
Made the final.
Made the final, lost by point. And, listen, but those are good days. But when you have, I mean, heck, what's it? Herder scored 8 points? Are you kidding me?
Like, yeah, that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad.
Julius Randle, he had no business being there.
Well, Randle was a replacement, though. He was late replacement. So you got to give him credit for at least stepping up and trying to do it. But yeah, he had no chance.
No chance. Like, God, I don't know. The three-point contest is at least tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, horse is not a bad idea. I don't mind the idea of
guys playing horse. Is there another game? Is there something else that we do at camp that we could do? What's something that we do at camp that we could do, Mike? Can we do a knockout game? Can we get like a
knockout would be fun. Honestly, knockout would be kind of fun. Even if you did it from 3-point land, there'd be enough misses, and basically, if you missed, you'd be out. Pretty much, you'd have to think.
Yeah.
It would go fast, but I think that it could be
fun.
Can we do a
knockout? Could we do
buzzer beater? What about a buzzer beater?
I think a buzzer beater would be good, right? Have them do that, and they have and even if it's like, because it's the NBA players and they can get up and down the floor so fast, maybe they have to go and do a whole U. Like, they start on the same end that they have to finish, and they have 8 seconds to start, and they've got to dribble between cones.
The question is, how many times can you have guys do that before you start hearing, oh, they're going to get worn out, and they're tired, and they don't want to do that?
Oh, they're going to get tired. They're going to get tired, and then...
I'm just telling you.
Come on.
These guys are getting worn out from the dunk contest, man. They're going to get exhausted.
I think McClung could have kept going.
They're going to get exhausted from four dunks. They're out, man. It's over.
All right. So, anyways,
I like horse. I like buzzer beater. I like knockout. Can we do hot shot?
Can we do hot shot?
Hot shot would be fun. I think hot shot would be fun.
It's kind of what they do. It's kind of what they do on the last round of the current iteration. But let's just do hot shot. Give them. You've got 45 seconds. Here are the points. Go. Like, you put. You could put two pros. You could do 10 guys. Mike, you ready for this, Mike? Here you go. 10 guys. 2 point guards. Shooting guards, 2 small forwards, 2 power forwards, 2 centers, and they go at it. They go one on one, and then the finals, all 5 of them compete again. And the 2 lowest scores have to go first. The next 2 lowest scores go second the next round, and then the best score in the first round gets to go last, so they know what they have to do. There you go. NBA just solved your problem. Go.
I think hot shot would be good. I think that'd be fun. I don't know. I don't like the skills contest. To me, I just think that it's not compelling. Even when you have interesting players in it, I don't find that particular format compelling. You're right that the previous iteration was at least semi-interesting, where they're competing on the floor against one another. I like that a little bit better, where they're going one-on-one. You had the bigs and the guards and whatever. But even that, I'd like to see something different. Hot shot would be good. I think knockout would be fun. I'm fine with any of those.
Awesome. Okay. So then we get... the 3-point contest, I mean, we already kind of summed that up. Anything you want to add about that?
The 3-point contest is fun, and I think the benefit that the 3-point contest has right now is that guys that are big names are still, at this point, willing to participate in it. And so you kind of have this dichotomy of you have a guy like Lillard, or in the past you've had Steph, guys who are Hall of Fame players who are willing to participate in it. And then you have some of the guys who are more just – sort of niche guys, right? They're three-point shooters. They're not necessarily the biggest names, but they're guys who can shoot the ball. And so when you have those two distinct groups of players participating, I think it makes it more compelling. Is Steph going to lose to a guy like Joe Harris, who clearly Steph is a better basketball player, but on a given night, could Joe Harris shoot the ball better and win the three-point contest? The answer to that question is yes. And so I think that's what makes the three-point contest compelling, is you have stars and you have role players participating in it. And as soon as you get to the point where stars don't want to participate, that's where you run into a problem. And I do think that when you start talking about three-pointers and you just start talking about shooting, I think you're always going to be able to get guys to participate in that, because I think guys always think that they're the best shooter, if that makes any sense. I think guys have a lot of confidence in their ability to shoot the ball. And the other thing is, your ability to shoot the ball in that contest is not at all affected by what somebody else does. Whereas like the dunk contest, you can have some really good dunks and somebody else can just have better dunks than you. Whereas in the three-point contest, if Steph goes in there and he shoots and makes, scores 29, even if somebody else scores 31, it's not a negative reflection on Steph. Whereas if you lose to Mac McClung in the dunk contest, you can see where as a star, there's not much upside to getting beaten in a dunk contest by a guy from the G League. So I think the three-point contest is always going to be able to attract stars. I'm not sure where we're headed with the dunk contest. I'm not really sure. So yeah, Dame shot the ball really well. You obviously had Halliburton get 31 in that first round and really shot it well. And then you had some guys shoot as poorly as we've ever seen anybody shoot in terms of Herder and Randall. But
once again, you're right though. Randall was like a fill-in, so we'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, I give him credit for even being willing to step into the mix there and give it a try and shoot it. So good for Julius Randle for being willing to step up to the plate there.
All right. So the dunk contest. Here, let's just lay it out for you. I picked Mac McClung. I'm proud that I picked the winner. He was the clear winner. It wasn't even, in my opinion, it wasn't even close, right? It wasn't even close, right, Mike? The way that they judged it was ridiculous that it was even as close as it was, in my opinion.
Trey Murphy had some good dunks. Now, his dunks were not nearly as good as McClung's. And part of it is, you say this every year, where a guy who's 6'2 doing things and dunking looks far more impressive than a guy that's 6'8 or 6'9 doing those same exact dunks. It's just the reality. He's up much higher off the floor and it just looks more impressive. But I will say, when you think about what McClung did, one, the fact that he made all four of his dunks
on the first attempt
was crazy. And he did do some things that you hadn't seen anybody else really ever do. Like, there were dunks that were unique.
I want to give credit, by the way. I haven't heard a single person say this. I want to give credit to the guy who piggybacked the full-sized man on his shoulders in Mac McClung's first dunk. That guy's quads, man. That was pretty impressive. That was impressive. I didn't see anyone give that guy credit.
Yeah, kept it steady for sure. Yeah. Kept it steady. And I think the thing with McClung's dunks too is you look at it and you say, okay, so you watch him in, and this is for every dunk, but McClung's, I think, stood out for this reason especially, was when you watch him in full speed live, you're not quite sure exactly what he did. You knew he did something spectacular, but you weren't quite sure what he did. Like that first dunk, nobody was really sure whether or not he had
tapped the backboard or not.
Tapped the backboard. And clearly tapping the backboard adds a whole nother element to how impressive that dunk was. And then the other one where he double clutched the sort of pump between his legs, that one, you could kind of tell he had done something, but then it was difficult to tell until you saw it on replay. And so all four of those dunks were as good as anything we've seen, and the fact that he was able to complete them with no missteps and only one attempt on each one of them made it triply impressive. The problem is that
it's Mac McClung.
I mean, that's the bottom line. Is prior to Now, you and I may have heard of him before, but prior to maybe that night, a huge majority of fans had never heard of this guy, didn't know who he was. Well,
Mike, did you see the thing that in his career as an NBA player, he's earned $108,000, and then winning the slam dunk contest, he won $100,000. So he almost made his career earnings at the, you know.
Made it worth it for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll say one thing, too, about Trey Murphy, because I thought he had some really good dunks. The one I liked the most was the one where he threw it between his legs, alley-ooped to himself. And most of the time when guys alley-oop the ball to themselves, they're letting it bounce. But the fact that he put it in the air and caught it and then did what he did after that, to me, that was a really, really impressive dunk. I think that dunk, if you really analyze the degree of difficulty on that dunk, like to me, that's a slam dunk contest winning dunk, because I don't think people appreciate how hard it is to put that ball in the air to yourself and not do it off the bounce. Doing it off the bounce gives you a lot more leeway in terms of how accurate you can be and just how fast the ball is moving and everything else. Whereas when you throw it up in the air, that ball is coming down,
yeah,
and it's much more difficult to gauge and jump and get it where you want it to be and then to still be able to finish it with the flourish that he finished with.
His first one with Jose Alvarado was clever. It was clever.
Yes.
It was clever. It's showmanship a little bit, you know?
Yeah, that was a good one. The problem is, again, it's Trey Murphy. Like, if that's Zion doing that same dunk, then it just becomes that much more interesting and exciting. It's just not as compelling to see Mac McClung going against Trey Murphy as it was to see Dominique Wilkins going against Michael Jordan. It's just not. And I think what you're looking at is, are we at a situation where do we ever get another all-star to participate in the dunk contest? And what kind of a mentality? It still seems odd to me that these guys don't want to go out and showcase what they can do. It still seems to me like it would be sort of a matter of pride, like you think you're a better dunker than me, or you think you're faster than me, or you think you're a better shooter than me, or you think you're a better one-on-one player than me. Well, let's go out and let's prove it. Let me show you.
Yeah.
But I guess the incentives of the money meant a lot to Mac McClung, but $100,000 doesn't mean anything to most of these guys who are in the All-Star game. So you have that piece of it. Two, for whatever reason, I don't know if there's how much the threat. We always hear that guys don't want to be embarrassed by losing. You've also heard guys get mad. I know that back during the Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon dunk contest, that Gordon was mad that the judging, he didn't feel like it was fair. And that's why LaVine ended up winning. So he said he was never going to go back because of the judges. Well, look, it's subjective. Like, welcome to diving and gymnastics and all these other figure skating, all these other sports that have judges. Like, that's just the way that it goes. So I don't know the real reason why guys don't participate, but it doesn't feel like that's a trend that's going to go away anytime soon. And as long as you continue to have these guys who nobody's heard of, or they're guys who are bench players, it's just never going to be as compelling as it would be if you have stars, no matter how good the dunks are. Like, the dunks were really good. It's just a matter of, I'd much rather watch LeBron and Zion and Ja do those dunks than watch Mac McClung and Trey Murphy and Kenyon Martin Jr. and Jericho Sims. Without the star power, that event loses a lot of its luster.
I agree. I don't really know what else to say, Mike, other than I agree.
Like, McClung was awesome. Like, those dunks were incredible. The fact that he did them all on the first try, and the fact that he's a 6'2 white dude, I mean, that's incredible. But he's still a guy who, up until a week ago, was in the G League, and 98% of NBA fans had never heard of him. So you can't expect it to be that compelling. It's just like, look, how many people are watching the NBA All-Star game versus one of those shows on TBS or TNT where they have the world's greatest dunkers? Nobody's watching that stuff because nobody knows who those guys are. And you want to watch guys who are stars just because of the flair and the personality and everything that they bring to the table. That's what makes it way more interesting. Nobody would have wanted to watch the NBA All-Star draft if two guys who were bench warmers for some teams were the two guys drafting. It made it compelling because you're watching Giannis and LeBron pick the teams.
Yep. I agree.
I agree with you, Mike. All right, so let's talk about the game. I mean, it was a disaster. Like, I don't even know. Like, going back to your point, do we even – listen, this goes – the NFL has completely gotten rid of the Pro Bowl. They played flag football. It was terrible. Okay? The only All-Star game that's worth watching is baseball, right, at this point.
I haven't watched a baseball All-Star game in 20 years.
But they're actually legitimate. They're actually legitimate.
But they are playing baseball. I will say, going back to when I was a kid, and now again,
we're talking. You didn't watch the All-Star game the year or two ago when it was in Cleveland? You didn't watch that?
No, I haven't watched a baseball All-Star game in years. But when I was a kid, I did. When I was a kid, I watched every baseball All-Star game because it felt like it meant something. You had the National League versus the American League. Those teams never played each other. You didn't have interleague play. There was this sense of pride. I still think that, like, I know why the NBA does the picking of the teams, and that was mildly interesting. I guess it wasn't as interesting as I hoped it would be, but it was mildly interesting. But the fact of the matter is that when you had the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference, you at least had some type of, even if it was fake, even if it was pretty meaningless, you at least had something that you were playing for. You were at least theoretically representing your conference against the other conference. Whereas with this, what's the motivation? Like, they're just, I know All-Star games have always been just throw the ball off the backboard and dunk and guys aren't playing defense and whatever. But now with the threes, you're getting way less dunks than, like, this game had way less dunks than any All-Star game that I can remember because everybody's just hoisting from 45 feet away. How many half-court shots were taken in that game yesterday?
I remember 8.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said 10. I could be totally off, but I just, at some point, it has to be at least semi competitive for it to be compelling at all. Like, I don't find it compelling just to watch guys make three-pointers. Like, at this point, like, we all know that everybody can shoot. It's not a surprise, but I'd like to see a little bit more of, hey, it's the last 5 minutes. Let's see who's going to win the game. I know Simmons always talks about that, even though it really doesn't matter, kind of who are the five guys that are on the floor for each team at the end of the game kind of tells you who are the most important guys in the league at that point in the year in that particular season. And it just feels like we're not getting that anymore. We got it the first year of the Elam ending, which was what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that. And since then, I feel like the game has just deteriorated every year. It's gotten worse and worse. It was borderline unwatchable yesterday. It really was. I don't know what they're going to do because at some point, just like the NFL, people are going to stop tuning in because
– Not to mention, what the heck is this, like, the draft from 7:30 to 8:30? The game started at 8:30-ish.
It didn't start at 8:30. It started like 8:45.
And then halftime was 40 minutes? Like, the game – listen, here, NBA, let me explain something to you. This game is not as important as the Super Bowl. This game took longer than the Super Bowl. It shouldn't. Fix it. Because my interest waned. Like, I'll be honest with you, Mike. Last night, I watched the first 15 minutes of the game, and then The Last of Us, which is a show you know nothing about, but it's The Last of Us on HBO, went live at 9 o'clock on HBO Max. I stopped watching the basketball game after watching 15 minutes of that garbage. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to watch my show, which was an hour long. I turned it back on, and that's when halftime was going on. And then it was like 30 minutes later. And I was like, are you serious? Like, I just watched an hour show, turned it on, and then I waited another half an hour. Because I don't think correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, the second half didn't start till almost like 10:15, 10:30, right?
It could have been. To be honest, I wasn't really paying much attention, but it was not a very compelling game at all. And so I could certainly understand why anybody would have turned it off.
And I'm not a casual NBA fan, Mike. That's the problem. I will watch. Listen, the Wizards could be playing the Thunder,
and I'd probably watch it. The Wizards could be playing the Hornets, and if it's the only game that's on, but it's on, I will probably watch it. I had zero interest in watching that last night. At times, it was terrible.
The problem was it just never, like, look, you understand to a certain degree that the All-Star game is what it is. We're not asking guys to ramp it up like it's game 7 of the NBA Finals. That's not what we're asking for. But it does feel like at some point, trying to win that game should matter at least a little bit, where you might play some defense. Like the defensive highlight of the game was LeBron's block. And I think that was that the block he hurt his finger on, or he tried He tried twice to block, I think, Siakam. I think he tried to get him twice, and once he missed it and Siakam scored. And then the other time, I think he blocked it. I can't remember if it was the one that he actually got a piece of the ball that he hurt his finger, or the other one. But either way, those were like the defensive highlights of the game, where LeBron trying to block somebody's layup. And other than that, I guess Tatum and Brown tried to guard each other for a minute and a half down the stretch and just playing one-on-one. But even that's not like real basketball. You're not playing the game trying to win it. Yeah. Those two guys were just having fun with each other. So it just feels like, again, as I'm watching it, and to your point about being an NBA fan, I want to watch that game. I've watched the All-Star game since I was like 6 years old. And there's been a lot of All-Star games that I've really enjoyed watching. And then there's been a lot, and more recently, that I just don't enjoy it. It's just not fun to watch, because at no point are guys trying at all to provide any resistance to what teams are doing on offense. And that's just, it's not fun. You got to have at some point, I get it, sleepwalk through three quarters, generate a bunch of highlights. Now guys are going to be shooting crazy long distance threes. Fine. But at some point, it feels like we got to dial it up at least a little bit and play a little bit of defense and see if, hey, we can't make it competitive to make it compelling viewing. And it was not in any way, shape, or form compelling viewing. Not in any way. I guess if you were a Jason Tatum fan and you just wanted to watch him shoot threes over and over again, great. I mean, Mitchell had, what, 40? Great. But it's just not compelling television. There has to be some competitive nature to it. Otherwise, to me, I'm not sure what I'm even watching. And the NBA is going to have to figure the whole thing out. I think that the idea of All-Star Weekend, like so many of these guys, especially now, we have the load management. And
did you see Anthony Edwards' comments?
No, what did he say?
Okay, I'm gonna keep going. Go on anything, and I'll tell you what Anthony Edwards' comments were. I've got to pull it up. I saw it. Okay. In ESPN.
Guess my thing is, a lot of these guys, right? They're stars. It's almost like they'd rather have the rest. Name me an all-star and let me stay home. Now, I don't know what the party scene is like and how much these guys are going out and how much they want to be there in terms of that.
Salt Lake City?
Well, but whatever. I mean, yeah. There's, again, it's not New York City, but there's plenty of NBAP. There's enough people in town that they can party. Edwards.
Okay. All these guys sitting, resting, just play, man. I don't like all the sitting, missing games and stuff. These people might have enough money to come to one game, and that might be the game they come to, and you're sitting out. It's just ridiculous. If I could change one thing about our game, is all these people sitting out. Okay? This echoes back to a quote from Kobe in 2019. You've got a lot of people paying their hard-earned money to watch you perform. It's your job to be in shape. It's your job to perform at that level every single night. And as a competitor, I'm not ducking shit. That's what Kobe Bryant said in 2019. So yeah, it's basically what Anthony Edwards said 4 years later.
I agree. I mean, I think that I don't know. I've never seen anywhere any compelling evidence that there are less injuries today than there were 25 years ago when guys were not resting.
I think there was more injuries.
If that data exists, I don't know where it exists. Now, you could say that the game is different, and I would agree that it is. You had a lot more, I think, bumping bodies 25 years ago, where guys were jostling with each other in the lane, and you had big centers posting up and power forwards hitting people and that kind of thing. Whereas today, I think you have more guys that have to cover more ground, so they're probably running more distances within one particular game than guys were years ago. But the fact of the matter remains that it's a business and it's an entertainment business. And when guys are on the road and they only come to your city if they're from the opposite conference and they only come once a year and fans want to see those people in person and they pay money to buy tickets and then they don't get to see Luka or they don't get to see Giannis or they don't get to see Steph, whatever it might be, those people are inevitably going to be disappointed. And when you keep disappointing your customers, eventually your customers start to look elsewhere for their entertainment. They look for other places to spend their money. And I think that I get it. I get why teams do it. I get they have a lot more data. I get that they have a lot more science behind the idea of why rest is important. And don't get me wrong, anybody who's ever played a sport, there's been times where you're tired, where you've played and you're like, ah, I probably don't feel at my best. But at the same time, I think that if you're healthy, you owe it to your fans and you owe it to your organization to be out there and be competing. And I know it's not going back. Unless the NBA somehow legislates some part of that, it's not going to go back. I don't see them reducing the number of games, which is something that you always hear thrown out there. There's too much money to be made in those 10 extra games that you'd have to cut to get it down to 72. And then even then, I think you'd eventually drift back to where guys would be sitting out games, despite the fact that you're eliminating 10 regular season games. I don't think it would alleviate the problem, but I agree with Anthony Edwards. I agree with Kobe. To me, as a player, if I was healthy, I'd want to be out there. And I don't care if I was tired. And I don't care if I was this or that. And maybe it's different if you've played 10 years in the NBA and you've been playing basketball at an organized level since you were 8. Maybe you do feel like I could just take a rest tonight. But to me, if you're a competitor, you'd want to be out there. And it's hard to relate to guys who just can sit idly by and not want to be out there with their team. I have a hard time relating to that mentality. And again, you don't know how much of it is the individual player, how much of it is the team, how much of it is them combining to talk it over. I don't know where it all stems from, but I just know as a competitor, I'd want to be out there. And certainly as a fan of the NBA and somebody who is going to buy tickets to go to a game, I want those players out on the floor so I can watch them play, because it's a more compelling product when your stars are on the floor. It just is.
Yep. I don't know, Mike. I don't know what the answer is. They got to fix something. That's my take. I don't know what it, I don't know that I have a solution. Anything else in the All-Star game, Mike? Or
I liked watching Jokic this weekend. Because I think there was a guy who he just was, hey, whatever, man, just throwing passes and doing his thing. And he's going to be the 3-time MVP. And the fact that, who knows, he might have been the last pick out of the starters, which you completely understand why.
Lauri Markkanen was the last pick of the All-Star.
Right, but I'm saying that Jokic got up and walked to LeBron's team to sort of preemptively say, hey, I'm not going to be the last pick. But you just think it's funny that here's a guy who's going to be the 3-time most likely MVP based on where we are right now, and he gets picked second to last or possibly
especially since Giannis is his closest competitor and now he's going to miss games. Did you see the news, by the way, that the next CBA, they're talking about if you want to be eligible for awards, you can't miss a certain number of games? That's potentially on the table.
I like that.
Well, that could alleviate some of the rest.
Could. Yeah, it could.
Situation.
You could tie awards to that. You could tie, I don't
bonuses?
Know how.
Well, can you, I tie, know how, can you tie bonuses
I,
to it?
I would think you could tie bonuses to it, but that would probably have to be a team-by-team thing as opposed to a league mandate. So then you get into
– unless the league wants to incentivize everyone, and if players play, you know, like once again, maybe it has to be someone that's on the max contract scale, right, or something. If they play 90% of the games of the season, they get
– right.
Like a $1 million bonus or something, then.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
There's probably something there that could be done, but I think it has to be something league wide to try to fix it. I like the idea of you can't win awards if you're not playing a certain number of games.
Yep.
To me, that makes a lot of sense. And look, if you get injured, It's too bad. That just happens. But for guys who are going to sit out all the time, you're just not going to be eligible for those awards. And then if those awards are tied to bonuses, maybe that's how you get to guys. Financially, I don't know.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
All right, Mike, let's talk the Cavs real quick. We're going to go back in time to last Wednesday, our last Tuesday, when we both picked them to beat the Sixers. Now, I will say this, Mike. They obviously did not win the game. They just don't quit, though, Mike. And that's the one thing that if I'm a playoff team that I'm going to have to play against the Cavs in the first round or the second round, I'm not necessarily going to be thrilled because they got down 28 points, I think, in that game. And what, they lose by 6?
Yep.
I mean, they just don't give up. And that also shows that they could play terrible in a half, and then the second half they play so well that, or they could, the other team could play so bad. I mean, I don't know what happened with the Sixers in the second half. I was flipping there, but they looked bad in the second half.
I think it was more the Sixers playing so well. They just shot the ball. It's like we talked about last year in the playoffs. I feel like that game was a complete microcosm of kind of where the NBA is, where Philly shot something like 55% from three in the first half on a huge volume, and the Cavs shot like, I think, 20% or maybe just under that. And so if one team's going to shoot a high volume of threes and a half and they're going to make 55% of them and the other team's going to only shoot 20%, you have what's going to happen. I mean, the Cavs are going to be down 30 points at halftime because the other team just banged home a bunch of threes. And then the second half, it sort of reversed itself. And I do think that you make a great point about this team not quitting, and they certainly are going to keep coming after you. And it wasn't necessarily that Philly played horribly or that the Cavs were that outstanding. I think it was just the fact that the Cavs didn't quit. The three-pointers kind of evened themselves out, and the Cavs just kept coming. And to me, it's a really good sign because you look at that game and you say, okay, we're down 30 at the half. Philly's completely on fire. As soon as this game's over, we're all getting on our planes and going our separate ways for the All-Star break. We won 7 in a row. We lose this one. It's on the road. It's to a team that is above us in the standings. Yeah, we would have liked to get it, but man, they shot 55% from three in the first half. Let's just pack it in. We got one more half, and then we'll go home, go our separate ways, get some rest, and come back after the All-Star break ready to go. It could have been very easy for them to do that, and I'm sure there were teams out there that would have done that exact thing, but they didn't. They kept competing. They kept fighting. They kept working, and they clawed their way back, and Mobley had a shot in the lane with, I don't know, 45 seconds to go that would have cut it to 2, and it didn't go in, and then they couldn't quite get over the hump. But if that game would have lasted, if that game had 5 more minutes in it, I think the Cavs probably would have won. And so I take it as a good sign, even though it was disappointing in terms of the start. It's understandable. It kind of is a game that, like I said, is indicative of the way the league is today, where if threes go in, you're going to look really good. If they don't, you got the potential to look really bad if your opponent's shooting it well, and I think that's what happened. So overall, going into the All-Star break, winning 7 out of the last 8, I think this team is set up pretty well. I know there's been a lot of talk about sort of where their record is and where the schedule is lying going forward. And I think they have a favorable schedule. And I expect if they stay healthy that at worst they're going to stay in the 4 spot. And I think if they stay in the 4 spot, you got home court advantage in the first round, and you're going to have a good chance to beat whoever's going to be sitting in that 5th spot, whoever it is. I think the Cavs will be ready. And who knows, maybe you can even get to 3. Philly's got, I think, the toughest schedule in the league remaining. So maybe you can overtake the Sixers and get up to the 3 spot, which
yep.
would be nice. I think it would be nice. I don't know who – we talked about it before. Who would you rather see, Boston or Milwaukee? I think you'd probably – I think you'd probably rather see Boston in the second round, but who knows? Milwaukee, Giannis's injury, and he's kind of had some, he's been dinged up a little bit this year. And Middleton, obviously, he's had a year and a half of not being able to stay healthy. So maybe you'd rather be on Milwaukee's side of the bracket and take your chances that somebody gets hurt in that series. I don't know. I think the higher seed you can get, the better off you are, regardless of kind of how it plays itself out.
All right. So now let's predict the Cavs record this week, Mike. You ready?
All right. I'm ready.
Thursday, home against Jokic and the Nuggets.
I don't want to say it's a big game. It's kind of an interesting game in that obviously both teams are coming back off a break, so both teams should theoretically be rested.
I'm going to say that Jokic is going to be out of shape, so I'm going Cavs win.
Okay, I'm going to go with the Cavs win. I got a Cavs win.
Okay, then Friday they travel down to Atlanta. Back-to-back. Let's see, does Atlanta play on Thursday? Atlanta does not play, so this is Atlanta's first game. So they would have extra rest. It's kind of unfair. Okay,
Atlanta's terrible. That's a win.
Here's what I'm gonna hedge here a little bit.
You're gonna go 2-1.
They're gonna go 1-1 in those two.
Okay.
Then on Sunday they play at home against the Raptors. We gotta win that game. We gotta beat the Raptors.
Yeah, you have to beat Toronto. Toronto has made you look bad. Toronto looks like the NBA champs, the two games they played against the Cavs so far.
Those are the only games that the Cavs play, those three games. So 2-1. I think 2-1. 2-1 is what's going to happen. Man, TNT is really lucky. Their Tuesday night game is really good, Mike. The Wizards and the Hawks.
That's a big game. Big game. Big game. All right, so I'm going to go 2-1 with, I'll go 3-0. I'm going to be optimistic. 3-0.
I'm going 2-1. All right. 3-0. So then the last thing we're going to talk about, we'll keep this relatively brief, Mike, is there's been three people who have been bought out of contracts and have gone elsewhere. And we're going to talk – we don't need to, like, spend a lot of time on this, Mike, but, like, do any of these matter? So I'm just going to say the three, and then I'm going to let you – I'll say which one I think matters, maybe. And then the other ones, I don't know. Okay. So the three big moves. Kevin Love got bought out of his contract with Cleveland and is ending to go to Miami. That's the first one. Second one, Westbrook has gone from bought out of his contract with Utah after being traded, and now he's returning to LA because he didn't want to have to sell his house. He's going to go to the Clippers. And then the last one is Pat Beverly going to the Chicago Bulls. I think the potential of the three, maybe in a positive direction, more likely in a negative direction. I think Westbrook's the only one that moves the needle one way or the other. I think neither of the other two moves matter because the Bulls aren't going anywhere. I don't think Kevin Love does enough, if he's healthy, to move the needle for the Miami Heat. It gives him a little bit of a shooting, theoretically, if Love is doing it. But I think Westbrook could make a difference. And let me tell you why, Mike. I'll tell you why. He could hurt them because he's a terrible shooter. Or now he's surrounded by a bunch of people who can actually shoot. So now what Westbrook can do, and I don't want to take full credit for this. I read an article today. I actually did some reading today, Mike.
Nice. Good work.
I don't know how to say it. Haralbob. How do you say that guy's name?
Haralbob.
Yeah, the guy, he used to be on Simmons' podcast a lot. Yep. Then he worked for the Mavericks. Anyways. He was stating that he thinks that Westbrook could be good because the Clippers don't have any guards that really penetrate and kick. And now Westbrook, you're not going to need to rely on him shooting threes. He just can go to the basket and kick it out to people open. And the way that Kawhi has played over the last 3 weeks and the way that those Clippers have played, like, he could be a big factor here. Now, once again, we've seen Westbrook's track record the last 2-3 years, and it hasn't been good. But will he accept the role? That's another if. But if he was, I could see this being a good move for the Clippers. Tell me I'm crazy, Mike.
Who's the Clippers GM right now? Is it Lawrence Frank still?
I don't know. Ty Lue's the head coach.
I still feel like it's Lawrence Frank. So you've just given the speech that Lawrence Frank gave to himself to convince himself and the rest of the Clippers front office slash staff that Russell Westbrook is going to change and he's going to play differently and have a different belief system in his own game than
Michael,
what he's had before.
Michael Winger is the...
I still think Lawrence Frank is the decision maker there, though, I think. Maybe he's the VP of basketball operations or whatever his title is. I still think Lawrence Frank is the guy who makes decisions there.
He's the president of the Clippers. You're right.
Okay. So I still think Lawrence Frank is the ultimate basketball decision maker there. So regardless. Okay. So first of all, I agree with you that Westbrook is the most impactful. And again, it could be positive or it could be negative. The Kevin Love thing, I sort of don't understand it other than the fact that Love went to the Cavs and said, I want to play. And because of their relationship, the Cavs decided we're going to kind of do this guy a solid and let him go, buy him out, and let him go where he wants to go. It still seems a little strange because I know he hasn't been shooting the ball well, but there was a time early in the season when he was shooting the ball well before he got hurt that he looked like he was potentially an important part of the team. And to me, he's still a guy that maybe he could win you one playoff game by coming in and getting hot and shooting the ball well. And he does have strengths and things that he does well. He can still rebound the ball. Prior to that injury, he could still shoot the ball. It seems hard to believe that the shooting has totally abandoned him, that if you gave him some rest and let him get back and let that injury heal, that he wouldn't be able to get back to being a good shooter. So I'm not 100% sure I understand exactly why the Cavs would let this happen or why they wanted it to happen. I get it. They were trying to do him a favor because of the positive relationship they've had with him, but it still seems like he'd be a guy that you'd hold on to. But that being said, he goes to Miami. I think the same things apply that I just said with the Cavs to Miami. I could see where Kevin Love comes in and has a game where he makes 6 threes and wins the Heat a playoff game. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. Is he going to be a guy who game in, game out is going to be an important part of their rotation, a guy that they can count on to play 20 minutes a game? I don't think that Kevin Love is still there, but I do think he's a guy that has a veteran presence. He'd be a valuable guy to have on your roster. I think he would have been a valuable guy for the Cavs to keep. And yet at the same time, I understand the reasoning behind why they let him go. So hopefully it works out for
them
in Miami.
They have a roster spot, Mike, now.
They do.
And
I don't
money.
Know.
Who do they hit? Who can they get?
I don't know. I don't know who you target. I don't know if there's anybody out there in the buyout market that off the top of my head that I can come up with. Maybe somebody will materialize that will make a difference. I do like the Danny Green signing. Will Danny Green end up being a contributor? I have no idea, but theoretically,
he played a lot of minutes in the first game.
Well, I guess you're trying to find out, like, what does this guy have left? Does he have anything left in the tank? Can he really give us something? Because if you get if you can get 90% of the best Danny Green, then you probably have a player that could play minutes in a playoff series for you. And I don't know if he's still capable of doing that or not, but the idea of Danny Green fits what this team needs, but it remains to be seen whether that Danny Green is still there. Yeah. And then the Patrick Beverley to the Bulls. I don't know. Like, if I'm Chicago, I would be trying to lose because they are having to give their first-round draft pick this year to Orlando. It's top four protected. So if it falls in the top four, Chicago keeps it. If it falls outside the top four, it goes to the Magic. And where the Bulls are sitting right now in the standings, that's prime territory for it to fall somewhere in the lottery outside the top four, which means you're getting rid of that top pick. And so if I'm Chicago, it's clear this team is not going anywhere. Maybe they're still delusional and think that this team can win a round in the playoffs or get into the play-in and win a couple games and get into a first-round playoff series. I don't see it. And so if I was them, I would have gone the other way. Now, again, they didn't sell at the deadline, so I guess they already made the statement that they feel like they're going to keep this team together and see what it can do in these last 20-some games. But to me, if I was Chicago, I would want to increase my chances of getting down into that top four and at least give myself a chance to be able to draft somebody that could maybe make a difference in the franchise. Because what they have now, if you're building around DeRozan, Vucevic, and LaVine, there's just no pathway forward for you to be a contending team. When you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, even if Lonzo comes back, they just don't have enough. Those guys are all flawed in their own ways, and they all have deficiencies that you just can't make up. So does Beverly make them better? I guess. I mean, he's a point guard. They've been playing Dosunmu, who's probably a little bit overmatched at the point. Really good player, but probably not a starting point guard in the NBA. You got Kobe White. Beverly, I don't even know. Do you consider him to be a traditional point guard? I guess he's more of a point guard than the guys they have on their roster.
He's good at getting cameras.
Yeah, but I don't know. Does he make you better? Does he make you worse? I don't know what Chicago's trying to do. If I was them, I would want to be worse so I could get into that top four and not have to give my pick to Orlando. That's what I'd be thinking if I was Chicago. But I don't think that's what they're thinking. So that leaves us with Westbrook. And I think you're trying to talk yourself into, I don't mean you, but the Clippers are trying to talk themselves into, hey, we can get the Russell Westbrook from that half a season when he played with Harden in Houston. And he just completely abandoned shooting jump shots and just went to the basket and was a creative passer and did all the things that, look, he's capable of doing. But that was for half a season out of his, 13-year career. And I just don't see it working. I don't see – if it didn't work with LeBron and AD, I don't see how it works with Kawhi and Paul George. It doesn't really make any sense. I guess if you're the Clippers, there's an upside because of what Westbrook has been in the past. But to me, that ship has sailed. Westbrook, at this point, you're talking yourself into him accepting his role as a secondary playmaker and a guy that shouldn't be shooting any jump shots at all. And he hasn't shown any inclination that that's where he feels like he's at in his career. And so to think that he's going to defer to these guys, plus the fact that Kawhi, I know he's still been playing more and he's been healthy now for a while, but he still is not playing in a third of their games. And so to think that they're going to develop the kind of chemistry that you need over the last 20 games to go in and beat some of these other Western Conference teams, I don't see it.
Okay. I mean, I agree with you. I think they're all bad. The trade, honestly, the only one that has a potential, in my opinion, still, the only one that has potential to do anything is the Westbrook trade. It could be great. It could be bad. It's going to be exciting to watch, Mike. That's what I'm going to say. It's going to be exciting to watch.
It should be interesting. Heading into the second half of the season, there's still, I think, a lot to be determined. And I think that you can make a case for a lot of teams having a puncher's chance to be able to win the championship. As good as Boston and Milwaukee are, I don't think you can pencil those two teams in as NBA champions. I do think that they're the two best teams if they're healthy, but Boston not healthy right now. Milwaukee was just getting healthy prior to this Giannis injury. Who knows? There's a lot of teams that if things were to break right in the bracket and you have an injury or two that I think there's probably 6 or 7 teams that could easily talk themselves into, we can win the title if things break our way. So it should be really interesting heading into the second half of the season.
Go Cavs. I think that's how I end it. That's how I want to end the podcast. Go Cavs.
Perfect. Hopefully, I think there's no way they fall lower than fourth, barring a complete collapse. And I'd like to see them get to third if they can. So we'll leave it there. Thanks to everyone for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.